I have it.
That boy like Madea. Let go, Madea.
Tonga by Lord. Blocked by Armstead. Two into the end zone. Caught for the touchdown! Caught for the touchdown! Waddle! Miami has taken the lead!
Dak, what the f***?
It's your favorite two degenerates back again with another Day One Dolphins podcast. Once again, hosted by your boy Ouch. Follow me on Twitter at YFinsYY. Here with me is my fellow lifelong Miami Dolphins fan, Chief Sutt. Throw him a follow on Twitter at Chief Sutt. Follow our podcast Twitter at Day One Dolphins. Stay up to date. Let's get down to it. What's going on, Sutt?
How about that ride in? I guess that's why they call it Sin City.
Okay.
I'm just tired, bro. They fried my brain. They fried my hopes and dreams. Not that deep, but golly, bro. It always feels like three steps forward, five steps back from the beginning of the season to the postseason. Year over year, my whole life, and I am tired.
Yeah. For all the people, you know, week four, week six that were complaining and crying about how the Dolphins are this and the Dolphins are that and how the Dolphins are fraudulent, and everyone was like, hey, shut up, man. Like, why are you doing that right now? It's because now's the time. Now's the time where you do that part, and we're all here
together.
Yep.
Yeah, well, if you wanted to do it early in the season, clearly you just don't want to enjoy anything while it's there, because we don't always know it's going to happen. We just hope that this year is different and it's not going to be it. Because, you know, the previous season, that end of the season run was horrific. So we thought, well, it can't be that bad.
Well, the playoff game was better, though.
Yeah, dude, how did we draw up a better game plan with Skyler last year than we did this year? Like, so many things just don't make sense. Now we're filling a DC position that we thought we had plugged in for the foreseeable future. Like, it's just such a repetitive cycle.
Yeah, it's a...
to take it Game of Thrones, I thought McDaniel was going to be the one to break the wheel. But it still goes. The Night King's here.
Yeah, I think there's some questions to be asked about McDaniel, though, now.
I mean, brother, I cannot complain anymore about this Chiefs game. I can't believe you made me pull up the stats. Most importantly, I don't know how you even got me here doing this right now after that performance, quote unquote. Well,
you did say you needed an extra week.
Dude, I needed to get right with myself first, because if I would have came on last week, it would have just been a whole bunch of sensor buttons and yelling. But
yeah,
at least the Bills lost, so I've taken a lot of peace in that. I've been getting back to my normal self since then. Feel great. And seeing everybody backing up Lamar right now is also just like kind of empowering me. I'm like, yeah, we're all on the same page. He's the best. Now you guys see it. So let's
go. I'm on the same page for sure. Yeah. But if you were to say, well, let's pretend like we didn't have enough injuries to ruin any defense in the entire league, right? If you were to say a reason that we lost the Chiefs game outside of that, what would it be?
Offensive play calling.
Definitely a contributing factor high on my list of things that went wrong. But we can explore why we might think the play calling was what it was. At first, you know, I was doing a lot of Adam Gase talk. I think a lot of people were, you know, it was reminiscent of the days when we would see him lack the self-awareness necessary to not call a screenplay on, doesn't matter, 3rd and 10, 3rd and 1, 4th and 1. Mm-hmm. But it looked like a lot of that out there. And we've questioned McDaniel's play calling numerous times throughout the season. And I even compared it to Kyle Shanahan, who still is one of the best play callers in the NFL. But, you know, just that style of aggression and offensive mind play calling when it doesn't work just looks so silly.
Yeah, it looks real smart. You look like a genius when somehow, like we were talking earlier, They ran 16 more plays than us. They only averaged 0.1 yards per rush more than us, but they had almost 10 minutes more of possession time, and they did it all on one less drive than us. So if you want to use the excuse that it was cold and the ball was hard to throw, okay, well, they did what we should have done and ran the ball more than 24 times. Isaiah Pacheco carried the ball 24 times himself, and we put that number as our magic number every week. They not only abandoned it in the second half, but it wasn't being utilized enough in the first half, and the first half was kept fairly close. So
yeah, it did look, and that's because we ran the ball more in the first half than we did the second half.
Like,
I mean, obviously, whether you're winning a game or losing a game matters when it, you know, it's going to skew the amount of times you run the ball, because if you're losing a bunch of times by the first half in most games, then you're obviously not going to run the ball as much as you would. But I think we can both agree that McDaniel doesn't really have the tact or the, you know, awareness in game to understand how to run the ball even while you're behind, you know, like just for the sake of,
you need to do it no matter what.
You want to marry the pass and the run efficiently. And sometimes he just gets away from it when we're losing and says, no, we just got to keep sending shots.
It's obviously hard to do. Everyone's, you know, it's human nature almost to want to just get the splash play and like make it happen. But not to talk about Baltimore some more, Todd Monken. I've watched him even when they were down only a couple of points to us. He still just ran the ball right down the field for an entire drive, maybe through two passes, and melted clock, kept right in it, carried himself as if they had a big lead. And by the end of the game, you don't want to deal with that no more, slash dealing with the speed guys and anything like that. So setting yourself up for success later in the game is what you're supposed to do. All those Pacheco runs that were only getting 2-3 yards early in the game, they set up the Rashee Rice big plays. But you're not going to get any of those big plays when Raheem Mostert carries the ball 8 times and like the most electric rookie running back in the league gets 6 carries. Like, how do you expect to compete on the road in one of the coldest games in NFL history without doing like the number one OG classic move in football? Run the ducking haul.
Yeah, and we've also talked about that multiple times this year, and we have touched base on the criticism of Miami and its lack of physicality in, you know, major sports platform or major sports media. When they're talking about the Dolphins, they're just saying, you know, they're flashy and they're not as physical as you need to be to play in these late season games. And you know, I don't think they're entirely wrong.
Do you think if they're wrong, who is physical on our offensive line? We can say Raheem is a physical running back. He'll run you over. But who does he have blocking for him that's actually physical in these late games?
I think there's a couple guys. Like, you know, Alec Ingold likes it. Like, you know, Robert Hunt likes it. But, like, you know, I don't deem Liam Eichenberg at center as a super physical person. You know, who else do we have out there for the game? Isaiah Wynn, or, you know, it wasn't Isaiah Wynn. It was Lester Cotton. And, you know, there's just you want to have the culture and the identity of it where, you know, like, no matter what, at least we're going to beat you to death in the run game. And it doesn't matter if you're winning or losing or whatever's happening, you know, when you have Derrick Henry or you're even the New England Patriots would do it. You know, they just make sure to stick to what they know is going to work. Like, if we can't run the ball, then this game's over. You know what I mean? But we're going to try to do it no matter what. Let that be the dictating factor here, like the deciding factor.
It wasn't even Lester Cotton. It was Bob Jones.
Oh, yeah. Robert Jones.
He likes it, I think, but he's almost a little bit more limited than some of the other guys.
I don't know if it's what McDaniel's convinced, you know, what they see in practice, or if McDaniel's just actually like inept when it comes to understanding what he needs to do mid game or even pre game, or I don't know what the reason is, but at the end of the day, we're seeing that we're either not running the ball by someone's mistake, or we're not running the ball because they know better than we do and they can't do it. You know what I mean? Like, they're not going to be able to do it. That's kind of my going theory, is that they know that we're not a run first team, that they know that all the, you know, bells and whistles and motions in the backfield, and when you do hit a chunk gain to Tyreek and you keep hitting these in-breaking routes, that's what leaves all the room for, you know, the big run game, like explosive plays to take place. It's just when one doesn't happen, the other doesn't happen, and we don't have a team that can say, okay, we're going to have a bunch of explosive runs first that open up the pass game. We work the opposite way, you know?
I think that's plausible. But I think this is also the first time McDaniel has the responsibility to do the physical play calling, because he didn't do it in San Francisco. I don't believe he did it anywhere else. He never really got an OC position, and Shanahan was doing all of it in San Fran. So he might have been assisting on it, and, you know, that's why the run game was so efficient. I think right now, like you said, he's got to deal with pregame stuff, checking in on people, in-game adjustments. All of that just seems like it's a little too much for him. So I started
super fair criticism.
Yeah, and nothing against him. Like, that's a lot, bro. So for somebody to have eyes on every situation, on down and distance, on trends, on all that, plus call the physical plays, plus deal with the injuries that are happening in game, it's a little too much. And I want to say around the Titans game, I started calling for him to rescind the play calling and either let Frank Smith call the plays and he does a little bit more overseeing, or maybe even you bring in somebody else that's familiar with the system to do it. But it sounds like Frank Smith's going to get some job offers. Most of them are already taken, but I hope we can keep him around and maybe even give him the play calling shot, and that could jump him to another job. But I don't know. I think he just puts too much on his plate, and he lacks the there's no one there to basically tell him, hey, bro, we ain't ran the ball in a minute. You know, you need to do that, because he's got enough stuff going on.
Yeah, definitely need some people around him, man, like you.
I'll go.
I bet you would, man.
I'll be there tomorrow, dog. I got to tell the kids first, but I'll be there.
I don't know what's going to happen, man, but I think it's a good point what you just made about him not calling plays in San Francisco. I think it's a fair point. And I knew that, but I guess I didn't really put it fully together like that. He just needs help. And he is, like, we touched base, I think, last week, you know, he's a great play designer. He's one of the best play designers. He's going to probably always have his hand in an offense in the NFL somewhere.
Right.
As it pertains to designing plays, being able to call them as the game is happening, feel the game flow, you know, it's a little bit different. I think when you're in your office and you're looking at things on paper and black and white, that you obviously know how to beat every coverage. You know how to, you know, trick people. You know how to call plays in the first half of the match to set you up for plays in the second half of the match. Your opening drive that's scripted is always very good and always very complimentary. But what happens after that? You know, there's just a missing piece here. And, right. It's become very evident and very clear. And I think that's where the Adam Gase jokes come in here.
I mean, it's clear when you watch the other playoff games and you see guys like Matt LaFleur and Kyle Shanahan and the way that they just cook. And they still have these cutesy, like, nicely designed plays that they're running. But the way that they scheme people ridiculously open is impressive. And Jordan Love, half of his, like, deep balls are to people unblown coverages, because their play calling is just so bop, bop, bop.
And they're scared of the run. You're scared of Aaron Jones. You're scared. Aaron Jones catches the ball multiple times as a receiving threat.
He's like, got their 2-point conversions.
There were just so many things that you saw our offense do and try to do early in the year when things were working compared to, like, down the stretch. Like, where's all the extreme wide receiver blocking? Where's all the, you know, convincing fake run blocking in the pass game? You know, like, in the first 3 weeks, everybody was so sold on it, and they had obviously watched a bunch of film. And then you shift out players, shift in players. Players are just happy to play with their hurt hamstring, you know, IR this, you know. And then all of a sudden, this whole ideology that you were succeeding with is just kind of, like, vanished, like, little by little, week by week, started to disappear. I think that We didn't see any, like, where's the no look shovel passes? You know, we abandoned the end arounds by a week. What? I mean, there was a week or two where we didn't want to see them anymore.
I was about to say, I wasn't mad about that part.
Well, no. Like, again, I think there's a fine balance in the no-look shovels.
I missed those. And, you know, they started doing that little fake step, ghost step thing in the playoffs. That was pretty neat. But, like, yeah, I did have some pretty high expectations for the offense coming into it this year. They showed it in the first month. And then it felt like we were still trying to show some stuff while hiding other stuff. And the second half of the season, actually, I'll just say the last quarter of the season, I think McDaniel just, like, it became an overthinking thing where everything either got too analytical or he was too sold on either feed Reek or feed whatever his idea was. But I think he started to slack a bit on the game planning towards the end there, which, again, very hard game plans for that last month, and the travel wasn't fun. They're flexing us to prime time. You had a short week in there. Like, I get it, but, like,
you saw the way Buffalo just played the Chiefs. They threw a lot of screen passes too, and it worked.
Yeah.
You know, like, I see what your idea was, but it looked like the idea you went into the game planning for the Chiefs was so limited that if it didn't work, you were completely screwed, and it didn't work.
See, but that's the thing. If it's simple, keep doing it. The Ravens are not running any complicated, super sick play design stuff like we're doing or San Fran's doing, and that's what makes them crazy. Everything they're doing is crazy basic, and they'll run the same thing six times in a game, seven times, out of maybe even different personnel, but even barely. They just give it to you. So,
I think every team you name, though, the Ravens, the Niners, and the Packers.
I'm saying the Ravens are doing it different. The other two teams are doing it more like us. They just have guys that can handle the play calling and the head coaching aspect a little bit better than McDaniel might be able to. The Ravens are just
run
different.
Run-wise, you know, you know that they're making it super easy on all three of those quarterbacks because the run threat is so real.
Yeah.
And it's not fireworks run threat like ours, where, hey, just don't let this dude break loose here. These guys are getting, you know, 3 to 5 yards of carry in the tough up the middle runs. And if they don't, and Aaron Jones gets 1 yard, comes right back again and runs it again with either Aaron Jones again or A.J. Dillon. Mm-hmm. You know, we saw Devon Achane a lot in the passing game in the first couple weeks, too. Raheem Mostert was even catching some. I saw Jeff Wilson get looks in the
pass
game.
I was about to say, Jeff Wilson, like, the Packers go 3 deep at running back. They go 4 deep in certain games. Ravens, 3-4 deep when they can, plus Lamar. Niners, Christian McCaffrey is the equivalent of 3 football players by himself.
And they still have 2 guys behind him, too.
And they still get work no matter what. Just because we're going to try. They're trying to run the ball 30, 40 times on you. Trying to, adamantly. Yep. And that's why they win.
And all those teams do that, and all those teams have a better offensive line.
We're such old men just talking about they need to run the ball and get some offensive linemen out here. But, like, we have this splash play offense with all this big, like, woohoo, look how fast we are. Like, nah, man, that's not what it is. That's clearly the Ravens don't need it. All these teams that are still playing don't need it. The Chiefs don't need it.
We just lean so heavy into that aspect of the offense instead of allowing the basic fundamentals of football be the reason that you can run that flashy side of the offense. You know, like I said, you worked backwards from the pass to marry the run instead of the run to marry the pass.
To play devil's advocate on that, I can almost see why we have to have an unconventional approach to offense, because we have a very unconventional situation at quarterback where we don't have...
And receivers too.
That's what I'm saying. So, like, if we want to make the splash play, like you're saying, the thing that leads to the running game, that's cool and all, but there needs to be a running game no matter what. And if they quote unquote can't do it, there's offensive lines that do not have more talent than ours that run the ball fairly well. Just do it more. Like, and if it ain't working, do it some more. Like, Mike Vrabel spent 5 years in Tennessee off that philosophy. Had a couple playoff bursts, won the division, all that, just running the
ball.
And
that's kind of what I want. I kind of want, like, think about how Tannehill looked, you know, when It's just like you're so scared of the run, and then boom, all of a sudden you have a pretty athletic guy taking a shot downfield, and you know he's able to like give you that.
I think
like,
you foreshadowed the answer right there.
I know, but I want that plus the fireworks. You know what I mean? Like our play action bootleg for Tannehill is going to be a bona fide touchdown to Tyreek Hill, or a bona fide, you know, 30-yard gain on, you know, an in breaking route to Jalen Waddle, or you know, it's something like that. But instead, it's like we're throwing the ball that's in triple coverage for a 12-yard gain on third down. You know what I mean? After we got a penalty to move us back.
Bring the king home.
We'll see. I don't know about that. We just talked about how the running back is not the issue. And even though it is nice to, like, you know what I mean? I got the iPhone 13. I'm not going to get the 15, though, probably. You know, my stuff, my mind's still working. It's still...
What if they got it for low, though?
You know that Raheem... you know that Raheem... You're talking about that black market phone.
I was saying, like, Derek Henry wants a ring chase. Pull up,
Cricket Wireless.
We need to make some of these ring chasing moves. And you can see we've started to allow a little bit more of it. At the end of the year, we kind of had to for the pass rusher situation. But even Jalen Ramsey, you're not going to tell me that he's not getting paid and also ring chasing right now. Tyreek's ring chasing. So we have vets that are doing that. We can bring in these splash guys like the Eagles do every year, like these other guys do. Who just, Ertz, just signed with the Lions?
Yeah, we knew that. We knew he was waiting to see.
That's another team. We haven't even had to talk about them because that offensive line is just so crispity, crunchity, beautiful.
And they have, like, the best run defense in the league.
And they have a play caller whose sole purpose is to call the plays. He's not worried about going for it on fourth down. Dan Campbell's going to tell him to do that in a minute, so he already has two plays ready. Like, yep. He's
I think Dan Campbell, like, he really does, like...
He empowers the other coordinators.
It's not just that. He has a good, like, little assembly line of how they're working things over there, and I think he's a perfect balance for me. Like, what they have going on right now between, like, the progressive offensive mind and Ben Johnson mixed with the hard nose like football in Dan Campbell, that's just a really good blend right there. You know, yeah. It's almost like a different way that the Niners do it, where you had, like, remember the Robert Saleh mixed with Kyle Shanahan over there,
that was dope.
The D'Amico Ryans mixed with the Shanahan over there, that was some tough nose defensive football. You know, mm-hmm. They'd rush four and get home. And then on the other side of the ball, it's big splash chunk plays, most yards per attempt from the quarterback. Like,
they were also drafting pass rushers and D tackles like every year in the first round over and over again. So they had the talent to just send four. We really haven't spent a lot of draft capital on pass rushers since Christian and I guess Jalen. But like,
I mean, the defensive run game for us was fine. And I think our D line, you know, barring the injuries, would have been top 10, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not really worried about that. They built that appropriately, and they started doing it in 2016, 2017.
I'll disagree. There wasn't enough depth at defensive tackle. And at edge rusher, yes, having Van Ginkle behind the two of them was solid, but these...
Tackle? What? Nobody got hurt at tackle. I don't think Wilkins or Sealer missed a game.
And I'm saying they still needed to take plays off here and there. And if we had some first round, second round talent behind them to spell them for a couple of plays, that would have been nice. Instead, it was just kind of Deshaun Hand and Raekwon Davis. And I think the Raekwon Davis ship has sailed. He hasn't. I don't know. I'm just over him. I didn't like. I know they played like every
like
snap,
bad
but
or good
I think that
or...
was more out of necessity in the Fangio system. Like,
I just don't. I don't like that he slimmed down, and then Fangio came in and asked him to do like what the opposite would have been. You know, like, we needed you to play like big boy nose tackle all of a sudden. You know.
Yeah, and we need like a short tree trunk to like be underneath there and cause that, which Sealer and Wilkins can handle. But
I think that was okay, though. Like, that was never the issue. How good those two are and how many snaps a game those two could play made up for, you know, like, we still posted one of the better run defensives in the league based off that alone. When you lose all your pass rushers, you know what I mean, within a 4-week span, and you lose two of your linebackers, you know, you lose your run-stopping safety. Javon Holland, who loves running headfirst into contacts, got two sprained tendons or ligaments in his knee. You know, it just makes a difference on that. And we are still doing okay versus the run.
We finished seventh against in yardage, 3.8 yards per carry. Not bad at all.
And when there was a team where they needed to run the ball, like, and that was like what they were limited to, and we had to stop it, we played well for the majority of the year, even with the defensive woes.
Even to in me, the Chiefs game.
Yeah, even in the Chiefs game. It was, you know, even in the Philly game. You know, every good running back we saw, Derrick Henry, like, you know, it wasn't that crazy. Like, there were no crazy games I remember where we just allowed somebody to run all up and down us, except for the Chargers game, that week one. And they made adjustments off that. But
yeah,
we will not have a top offensive line. I know that. And you look at the teams that are left in here, is there a way for you to look at the, like, pass blocking rankings?
Yeah, I'll pull it up. We'll go on.
Give
BFF
me the top four, baby. I want to see the Chiefs. I want to see the Ravens. I want to see the Lions and the Niners.
Yep.
But it seems that all those things are what teams have in common when they get this far.
So pass blocking,
on a consistent basis.
Top, I'll give you the top 11. So 1, Philly, 2, Minnesota, 3, Baltimore. Baltimore's actually tied with Atlanta for 3rd. And then the Denver Broncos, Kansas City Chiefs, Colts, Bucks, Bills, Green Bay Packers, Detroit Lions.
There you go. 3 out of 4 of them post the top 4, and I bet you the Niners aren't far behind there.
Yep.
And they're dealing with some injuries.
Let's go to run blocking. Number 1, San Francisco.
Knew that.
Number 2, Detroit Lions. Number 3, Eagles, 4, Broncos, 5, Rams. Of course, shout out to Sean McVay. 6, Ravens. 7, Falcons. 8, the Indianapolis Colts.
Wow.
Yeah. 9, the Washington Commanders. 10, the Vikings again. So Vikings, man, that quarterback situation there just really screwed them. They kind of had everything else going on, but sucks to suck.
Yeah. And that's the other thing, is it really is a game of attrition. And, you know, you want to have so many good things going for you that you can overcome the inevitable bad things and injuries that everyone kind of deals with. But the amount of injuries that we suffer at one position are the ones that kill you. You know, when you lose 4 pass rushers or 4 corners, like last year, you know, we were on our 7th corner. That's what kills you. You can lose 1 here of everything and 1 there of everything and be okay. But you can't be on an entire 3rd string of offensive linemen and expect to go toe to toe with the other top 3, top 6 teams in the league. So
You can if you just draft offensive defensive linemen in the first 2 rounds, 3 rounds in every single draft over and over again.
When is Chris Greer the guy that's going to hit on offensive linemen for you?
Hey, man, if that's not in his wheelhouse, I'm just saying that's what works for San Fran. That's what works for Detroit. That's what works for Baltimore.
Three out of 4 of the teams that you just named probably have top GMs in the league.
Yeah, the way Howie Roseman cooks is how I would cook.
Yeah, him, and then Baltimore has been one of the best front offices for as long as I can remember.
Facts.
The Niners, what's his name's
John
escaping
Lynch.
Me right now. Yep, John Lynch, one of the best. Jerry Jones has his hands all in the pot in the Cowboys.
Yeah, screwing that all up.
Yeah, but they churn it out, man. They've been drafting good. Like, look,
they always
Micah Parsons. They who got him?
They always have an offensive line. They always have a D line, and they always got a playmaker too. Always.
It's the reason that the Cleveland Browns were like a runaway car with no one in the driver's seat, that they just kept throwing dummies inside of it. And it's like, well, this thing's going. Jump on the ride, you know. And you want to be able to have a team like that. You want to have a team that's going straight to the playoffs without no matter who's driving it, because the fundamentals of team building are so solid, and you have a top D line and a top O line, and everything else is just extra special.
Yep. And then you look at a team like the Jets and the Giants that are basically on the bottom of every single one of these metrics. You can sort the receiver room after we looked at pass blocking and run blocking, just the receiving grades. So how well an overall receiving room did. Number 1, San Fran. Number 2, us. Number 3, Detroit. So you got a team that's in the top 5 in run blocking, pass blocking, as well as their skill guys performing. Houston Texans finishing 4th. That's with a whole bunch of quote-unquote no-name and random guys getting pulled by a rookie quarterback. Stuff like that's going to push you into the playoffs. It's just crazy seeing us so high up in all these metrics, and it just fell apart. And All you had to do is beat Will Levis. That might be the next shirt that I get or the next tattoo I get. All you had to do is beat Will Levis, and this entire season would have been completely different. But
and you know, the defensive coordinator may be to blame for that one, or I don't know. But speaking of which, a couple hours before we decided to finally get this done, Vic Fangio was left, has agreed mutually with the Miami Dolphins to part ways, which I think is just him quitting. How you feel about that on a scale from 1 to 10 of upset?
My instant reaction was about an 8. And for perspective's sake, when Flores got fired, that was about a 9.5. I just couldn't believe that happened. But then seeing all the player reactions, seeing Javon and Jalen and Trill, shout out to my Cam boy Smith. Trill, Cam Smith, seeing all these boys that I respect that I didn't see getting any work, being happy about it, made my 8 drop down to about a 2. Maybe it's probably for the best.
I'm not disrespecting Vic Fangio, because I think I said it in the chat, like, you have a resume that, you know, speaks volumes. Like, it doesn't matter what anyone's opinion on you is over one season of football. Like, you're not going to tell me that Bill Belichick can't coach a team either. You know what I mean?
It's never.
You know Vic Fangio is going to, you know what he is, but it doesn't seem like he wanted to be here based on the reports, based on what the players are saying, based on, you know, Omar Kelly saying, like, doesn't seem like he enjoyed his time here. Doesn't seem like he planned on being here long. Allegedly had his bags packed well before the playoff game, knew he was leaving. And then look, oh, he's going to immediately accept a job in Philly, where he's been living, where he helped, you know, aid the defense of the Super Bowl contenders last year. He was already there, like, helping the defense last year for the Super Bowl run. So, you know, it just didn't work out for him to be the defensive coordinator, and I expect him to fully be the defensive coordinator in Philly now. That seems like that's where he wanted to go all along.
Wasn't there some conversations that he would have went there if there wasn't some tampering stuff going on with Jonathan Gannon? Like, he originally didn't even want to come to us. We just offered the most money, essentially.
And at the end of the day, you could be the best in the world. I don't care if Michael Jordan's our quarterback. You know, if he don't want to be here, he ain't going to be that Michael Jordan.
Nope. So,
Which, by the way, I would give Michael Jordan a shot today at quarterback if we needed.
He could probably make some plays. I would rather teach him how to play outside linebacker or maybe inside linebacker. Just have a dog in there. That's a little crazy.
he can't be taking them hits. He's...
What you mean? We'll get him in a good, nice little weight program. We need to get rid of our strength and conditioning coach if we're out here getting rid of coaches.
But I mean, he does wear jorts.
Our strength and conditioning coach or Jordan?
Jordan.
All right. We'll see what he can do. We just got to get you to dip. Let's get them hips. He's got to read a guard. It's easy. You'll love it.
Trash fashion. One of the worst fashions of any star ever that I've ever seen.
Who's going to be our next defensive coordinator? Is it going to be Campanile?
Anthony Campanile, I do like. We saw him on Hard Knocks, fired up. It's strange to me to imagine a world where Mike McDaniel's 3 defensive coordinators in his 3 seasons, assuming he's here next season, is going to be Josh Boyer, the leftover defensive coordinator from the Flores regime. Then he goes into someone he obviously agreed on hiring and was looking forward to with Vic Fangio. And then the next one's going to be kind of like a more like internal hire interim feel with Anthony Campanile. Not to say I have no idea what his ability is calling defensive plays. You know what I mean? I just know that he seems like he's a good coach and he's obviously been in the system for a little bit and he's familiar with the players. He's a candidate. Wink Martindale is obviously going to be a candidate, and I'm not opposed to that either. It's an interesting one. I think Leslie Frazier is going to be a candidate. I'm not thrilled with that one at all. And then people are saying the defensive coordinator for the Carolina Panthers, not even sure how to pronounce his name, to be honest. Not familiar with him, like, whatsoever. What were we saying his name was?
The British dude.
Well, he was born in England, technically, but he's from Rancho Cucamonga, I believe, California, over here. His name is...
So what's he repping? Is he repping Rancho Cucamonga, or is he a Brit?
He's probably like 21 Savage, where, you know, like, you never knew that he was British. And
fair.
I imagine California. Ejiro Evero
All right.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I don't know. There's probably a couple other like defensive candidates that we're not really thinking of right now, but those are the names that come to mind as far as what the NFL looks like right now today. Is there anyone you can think of I missed?
Not really. I've seen Sean Desai's name pop up once, but
oh yeah, Sean Desai, Brandon Staley. I'm not even entertaining those.
Yeah, none of them. I like keep it in house, and if you know Campanelli can't handle it, figure it out later. But I don't think we need to start bringing in more. If they didn't connect well with the old school style of Fangio, I don't know how well Wink Martindale is going to be received. And like.
True.
Wink clearly just left a pretty solid situation for a reason. So, I mean, either he didn't gel with these new kids or I don't know. But I would rather us not rock the boat. It seems like we have a lot of guys that love playing together, and it seems like they have what it takes to take it to the next level. They just got to put it all together, bro, and stay healthy this year.
Well, I just hope that it's not Brandon Staley.
Yeah, it'd be so corny.
I would be sick to my stomach, but
he knows the system
for multiple reasons. I mean, he is a good defensive mind, but obviously his play calling ability, not even just offense, is suspect. And
I mean, you're talking about play system. Calling, same thing. He was a young head coach trying to deal with a million things, and he couldn't handle it either. Clearly,
yeah, you definitely need to hit the ground running and have a lot of people around you you trust.
Yeah.
We might be losing a couple people to, you know, some other jobs off of our staff this year too. So
I could see Frank Smith leaving, but,
yeah, he might be a head coach somewhere. So,
yep, we'll see.
But right now, if I had my money on it, I mean, it looks like Anthony Campanelli is going to get a good look. We definitely want them to fire the special teams coach, Danny Crossman, right?
Bro. We knew wanted to fire him 2 seasons ago. I wanted to get rid of Lou Anarumo, but he's a DC now. He's been balling.
I can't believe we went from having the best punter in the NFL to the worst punter in the NFL in one season.
Just like you guys wanted to follow the Patriot way so bad. He's a bum.
Yeah.
Should have kept Morehead. I liked Morehead. Morstead,
yeah, he's solid, and you saw it pay off in a couple games. I think there was a game where the Jets played the Giants, and he broke the record for the most punts in a game.
Like, good for him. Beast, bro. I like him.
But yeah, there's definitely going to be some changes here to the Miami Dolphins coaching staff, and look for these next few weeks to kind of show what they're looking for. Hopefully we get some actual confirmed interview candidates coming up here soon within the next, I imagine, like it'll heat up those like the week of the Super Bowl, and then the 2 weeks following is usually when things start getting crazy. So I guess we'll touch base back and talk about all the for sure candidates, where they come from, what their style is, what type of defensive coverages we could see, what players on the Miami Dolphins defense that you think that coach might be most interested in utilizing, what free agents they might bring in to support that system, et cetera, et cetera.
That'll be fun. More off season.
Oh. Yeah.
Here we go. Sadness. Again, dude.
Sadness is also setting in as I said that for me.
Oh yeah, dude. I just like, oh man, I know. It's all good. We'll be right back here next year with an upgraded system. We made it through the whole season. Well, yeah, we're just gonna keep getting better. Hopefully they do the same.
Yeah, I'm not ready to say that. I think we're going to keep getting better, but we'll see what happens.
No, I'm talking about us. They when Dolphins are going to keep getting better. I can't speak I can't speak for the Miami Dolphins. I have no hand in that. But
yeah, the Day One Dolphins podcast, we're definitely going to look at the film, you know, see what we could have done better.
Absolutely.
And look forward to next week, you know. Until
season
then,
never ends, baby. Fins up.
Follow me on Twitter at YFinsYY. Follow Chief Sutt at Chief Sutt. Follow the podcast Twitter @Day1Dolphins.
That thing pissed me off.
I don't think we need to end it. We don't need a pins for the win.
No, we didn't win anything. But we'll see y'all soon, bro.
See y'all soon.
Miami has the Dolphins, the greatest football team. We take the ball from goal to goal like no one's ever seen. We're in the air, we're on the ground, we're always in control. And when you say Miami, you're talking Super Bowl, 'cause we're the Miami Dolphins.